welcome to the Auckland Cricket Podcast. My name's Ian Lexon. I'm joined this evening by PJ Veneman and Neil Wright. Welcome, gents.
Good evening.
We have much to talk about, as usual. There's been all sorts of stuff happening, mainly offshore, actually. So we're going to start with some Black Cap action, and I'm going to put it out there. There was a Champions League final just 3 or 4 days ago, maybe, and Mumbai won over the Royal Challengers Bangalore. I think that's their name. Yes, it is. I'm going to confidently say it. Dan Vittori's team got up over... does anybody play for the other team that is for New Zealand? Doesn't matter. Irrelevant.
Vittori's team lost.
Yeah, they did. That's a very good point, actually, Neil. Very good point indeed. Because what we want to focus on is a team that won, James Franklin. Scored 41, bowled a crucial over in the 14th over, I believe, for four runs. Pivotal time in a 2020 challenge. And he actually had a great tournament. He scored a few runs in, I think, a couple of the games leading up to the final as well. And he's a much maligned chap, quite a bit on this pod, actually, over the course of time. So my question is he finally coming of age for the Black Caps, or is this just another false dawn for James Franklin?
Well, that wasn't for the Black Caps, but when we were saying this about Jimmy Franklin the last time, it was when the Black Caps toured India. So obviously he has some kind of affinity for the grounds in India. I wouldn't really rate him on a 2020 performance or even a whole 2020 season, because I don't really rate 2020 cricket. But it'll be interesting to see him in the one days in Zimbabwe, and certainly even more interesting to see him if he gets a chance at home. I've always liked Jimmy Franklin, and he hasn't got a lot of opportunities through injury and through poor performances when he has got a chance, but maybe he will be the next Jacob Warren.
Wow. Watch the space, Neil.
Yeah. That's interesting. I read a bit of the commentary on Crick Info, because after reading the headline in the semi-final, I think it was Malinga and Franklin guide Mumbai to victory or something. Mm. And reading through the commentary, when Franklin was bowling those last overs at the death, it was always, Franklin bowls, short ball or length ball, but never got hit. So, yeah, I'm not sure whether it was a case, of the batsman just being crap or Franklin being lucky. But, I mean, hey, yeah, semi-final and final, he stepped it up when it matters. And, yeah, as PJ's alluded to, he seems to love India. And Zimbabwe's probably the perfect chance for him to build on that and go some way to kind of cementing the spot again in the New Zealand team.
Maybe the batsmen just didn't really thought, the ball never arrived, and they just weren't quite sure when they need to hit it. Yeah, Zimbabwe's going to be a good opportunity. You'd have to rate yourself to pick up runs and wickets in Zimbabwe, surely. No offence to the fellas over there, but if we don't win convincingly over there, there'll be people, bringing up Bangladesh last year, won't there?
Mm. Yes, yeah, that's too soon.
Sorry, bit raw. Okay, well, talking about people who have been around for a while, perhaps unfulfilled potential, up and down, in and out, generally of variable form, let's talk about Jacob Warham. And Jamie's not here to grump and moan and generally rant about it. So Jacob Warham, there's an article out there today, actually, about his new desire to play for the Black Caps, and that he's had thought about retiring after the World Cup, and what was his next motivation, that he's now focusing on the World 2020 next year. I'll just say, pull something out from that article, because it really amused me, that they said that his continued value to the Black Caps was shown with an impressive showing at this year's World Cup. Now, this is the definition of the impressive showing for a New Zealand player. According to the New Zealand Herald, averaging 19.67 with the bat, 12 wickets at 18.42. Yep, fair enough. 19.67 with the bat. We set the standards pretty high for these guys,
okay,
don't we?
Look, statistics don't always tell the whole story. Jacob Warham came into a lot of those innings with the bat to finish off an innings, and he did so spectacularly.
Often, but why wouldn't you say that then?
Often scoring at 200% strike rate. I mean, because that takes a lot more lines in an article than just saying he had an average of just under 20.
Okay, so it's sloppy journalism rather than the fact that he was actually crapper for the bat at the World Cup.
If I had had a chance to write that article, it would have been 3 pages long.
It already is. Don't worry, they crap on forever about him. So, okay, well, you're obviously a bit of a Jacob Warham fan from that kind of take on it.
I do like Jacob Warham. He's suffered, we've been frustrated as fans. I'm sure he's been even more frustrated with his injuries. And I think for probably the second half of his career, he hasn't been used properly. He said a long time ago, maybe 2 years ago now, that he was looking to wean himself off being a 10-over bowler in the ODIs, stopped playing Test cricket because he was concerned about his body. But we've continued to play him as a frontline bowler, a first-change seamer, and he bats at 8 or 9. It's ridiculous. He's not being used properly. He has not been used properly in recent time. He's the type of batsman who should be batting at 6 or 7. And if he doesn't want to bowl his 10 overs, I mean, he's a valuable bowler, really economical and consistently picks up wickets. He's been the backbone of our bowling attack for
Neil,
a long time.
Are you also a paid-up member of the Jacob Warren Fan Club?
Not quite a life member like PJ is, but I am a fan. Yeah, and largely agree with what PJ said, to be honest. It'll actually be interesting then, because PJ raises quite a good point in that he is probably bowling a bit too much and batting a bit too low for, you know, what I suppose his body allows him to do and how he's best suited to fit into the team. Yeah, given that former Zimbabwean captain Elton Chigumbura, obviously in the squad over there, quite a similar play to Oram, and he sort of transformed himself to be a sort of 6-7, but a floater. Chips in here and there with a few overs, very, very explosive hitter. So the head-to-head battle between them will be fascinating. Sure, I've digressed a little bit, but
yeah, you seem to be talking about somebody else completely now. But that's cool. but I disagree slightly because I think they took him to the World Cup as a bowler. They really were looking to play him as a batsman. That's why he's batting 8 or 9.
Yeah, and I understand.
He must have been happy with that. Otherwise, why would you go to World Cup if you've been told presumably that you're basically there to bowl your 10 overs? And to bat 8 or 9.
Yeah, look, I understand that, and he understands that that's his job that he's been given in the side, but I think it's wrong. He made it quite clear quite some time ago that he wanted to not be considered a frontline bowler. He actually said that he didn't want to bowl anymore. He wanted to be a batsman. And we continued to, because he was the backbone of our bowling attack. If they had taken his 10 overs out of our side, we would have been absolutely screwed. This is at a time when Southey was going for 50, 60 runs for his 10 overs and really picking up one or two wickets. He was as valuable to our bowling attack as Gavin Larson was in his era. Really economical and picking up wickets. He's an explosive batsman, and I like the word floater. So many times I've watched
in
Jacob Warren.
In a cricket context, that's great. Yeah.
Thanks for pointing that out.
I don't rate him as necessarily being, you know, if you look at Brendan McCullum and say, yep, take away wicketkeeping, he'd definitely still be in your side as a top line batsman. Jacob Warham, I'd say he's still 50-50 in that proposition.
McCullum's still 50-50 in that.
But
regard.
The talent, yeah, I can see, you think Brendan McCullum, you go, definitely talent's there, maybe it needs a bit of honing and a bit of more consistency, etc. I think Oram's always been, apart from one or two seasons there, and no, when he was in Australia, he was awesome and he was on fire and he was belting sixes all over the place, and that's when I think he had some real consistency to his game.
Batsman bowler. That's when he came into the New Zealand side, he was a batsman who bowled.
I think he's always been an all-rounder, though. I don't think that one part of his game is significantly stronger than the other. And that's why I think he's going to struggle to do just one over the other. They've used him just as a bowler in recent times, but
yeah,
I think it's
much more a
bit of both.
I would like to have seen him more recently being used as a floater in cricket terms and being brought up the order when the need arose. I mean, I've watched so many games where I've thought if they brought Jacob Oram in now, we've got a few wickets in hand and we've only got 15 overs to bat out, bring Jacob Oram in. But instead they bring someone like Kane Williamson in, who plods along, and I don't think he's been used properly of late.
Okay, well, the fact is, and it sounds pretty clear now, that he's saying that 2020 World Cup is going to be his swan song. And if you take PJ's view, which is fair enough, that he's been an integral part of the Black Caps lineup, especially the shorter forms game, for quite some time, who's going to be stepping in to replace him? To take that role, not, you know, be the new Jacob Oram.
I don't think it's too tough to find someone to do that in the short forms of the game. Someone like Doug Bracewell could potentially fill that role. And there are a few guys in the Auckland 2020 side who could probably take that step up. But I think what we're really missing is someone of Jacob Oram's ability or his skill set in the longer version of the game. When he quit Test cricket, that was a massive, massive hole in the side. Mm. Having someone with both of those skills.
Wouldn't you love to see Colin de Gronholm? He could do that job. Of course, he needs to be a whole lot more consistent and score runs consistently, but he's got that all-round skill set. Mm-hmm.
Logan Van Beek's another one, I suppose, although obviously untested at the moment. But
he's a Canterbury.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. And the other thing with Oram is just batting and bowling aside. You know, he was an awesome gully or point fielder, and then equally is fantastic on the boundary.
Former soccer goalkeeper, apparently.
Jeepers, yeah. Yeah, indeed. So, yeah, you know, he really, truly was like Chris Cairns, I suppose, you know, like an actual all-rounder. I think we'll feel it once he does actually retire, and as PJ says, he can sort of replace him in the short forms of the game, but if the guys that we replace him with are found out to be crap, then, yeah, we'll probably realise then. You know, as is always the case, you only realise once they're gone, he'll leave a mess.
Sounds like we're writing his eulogy.
It does.
Rest in peace, Jake, and may you enjoy your last couple of series.
Actually, now that you mention that, I find it really odd. I mean, someone like Nathan McCullum, I know it's not the same skill set because he's a spin bowler and not a seamer, but someone like Nathan McCullum could be a permanent all-rounder in the short forms of the game. What I don't understand is why they're sending him home after the T20s and one day as in bringing Jeetan Patel in. Why not give Nathan McCullum a go in the test matches? I don't understand.
I'm presuming that they see his form. I guess it's that difference in spin bowling between guys who specialise in one day and 2020 spin bowling often bowl quite differently to test bowlers in terms of spin. They dart it down, they keep it pretty flat, they have probably an arm ball and small variations to
well,
it.
Well, I realise...
very wicked,
yeah,
whereas in
I
test
realize
match it gets thrown up a lot more. And people get a bit seemingly into that pattern. I guess Ronnie Hare is a good example of that. Is, you know, barely played a first-class game for Auckland, but was a standard for one day in 2020 stuff and developed his game, I think, quite specific to that. And it almost becomes, you get further and further down that road and people stop looking. And I think the selectors have stopped looking at Nathan McCullum as an option in
Well, that's
cricket.
Ridiculous. They should certainly look at him as an option because Jeetan Patel's not going to be around forever. I know they're probably of similar age, but as far as experience, Nathan McCullum's feeling new to the setup. Jeetan Patel's been tried.
Found wanting?
Well, he's performed admirably, but he's not what I would consider the saviour of test bowling attack.
Yeah, I don't know if he has, but he has performed admirably on occasions, but it's been quite some time ago. But hey, we will see. That's probably enough of a extended rant on Jacob Oram. And
I tried to extend it.
No, the fantastic stuff. All right, let's look at some other news that's been happening here or close to us. Now, this is probably a bit of a follow-up from a story in some ways that we did last time around, which was about New Zealand cricket appointing that guy whose name now evades me to their new national selector, Veena or whatever it's called, and he's the dude from
Little John.
Thank you.
Kim.
Yeah, Kim. Yeah, that's the guy. And his background is in lawn bowls, amongst other things, in Australia. And sort of perhaps referencing that, Cricket Australia have just appointed Pat Howard, as in the former Aussie rugby international, to be the general manager of team performance. Now that means, this is all out of that Argus review that happened just a little while ago, this position oversees the appointment of Australia's new coach and selection panel. Australian captains, coaches and selectors will report to Howard. And apparently he's been previously general manager of high performance unit for the Australian Rugby Union and has played and coached, more importantly, with Leicester Tigers in England. It's kind of becoming a bit of a trend in cricket, isn't it? Don't get somebody who actually has a background in your sport. Find somebody who can do something in another sport. It's an interesting phenomenon, don't you think, Jinx?
Certainly. I mean, well, I don't know what skills are transferable for Pat Howard's position. I don't know exactly what he's going to be doing with the team, but
he'll be great taking the touch rugby stuff before they, you know, for the warm-ups, though, won't he?
Yeah. But I mean, cricket, obviously, cricket administrators and coaches are probably quite thin on the ground by comparison to other sports. So if there are transferable skills, it's not shocking that they would bring in coaches and administrators from other sports. Surprise me.
He's very young. He's 37. I mean, he's only, what, 3-4 years retired, I would imagine. So you kind of that always just strikes me as how much experience could he have had in the coaching / administration side or whatever he needs for those, because he's been playing rugby for most of his life, hasn't he?
I think he retired as a player, certainly from down here anyway, a lot longer than 3-4 years ago.
Is he?
I think he might have taken the money and gone to Europe, and obviously hence the Leicester Tigers reference. But I'm surprised to hear he's 37. Perhaps he was like a almost like a player coach type thing. Well, you know, coach that would play when they're desperate. Yeah,
like
that age. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like Smith and Matfield. Yeah, I suppose he's got to have some sort of experience if Cricket Australia is hiring him for that.
Interesting as well, I'd say. Mm. Yeah, we will watch his progress with interest.
I suppose the trend is obviously with Little John and Pat Howard now. Obviously, they've seen the light and want to come and be involved in the greatest sport in the world. So, yeah,
we should welcome them with open arms.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's like the heathens coming to the light or something.
Exactly.
Isn't it? Fair enough. Like, if he does a good job, then good on him. Good on him, I say. Okay, what's another big matter? Another one that has hit the news this week, and I'm going to hold back on my judgments on this one to hear what you guys have to say, but it's a bit of an RIP to the DRS, because the ICC have gone back on what they decided just 18 months or 2 years ago, that it's now not mandatory for, and DRS, in case you don't know, is the decision review system, so referring stuff upstairs in games, and it's now not mandatory in any series. It means that the two competing countries, in any series is up to them to decide whether they use it or
ridiculous.
Not.
Absolutely ridiculous.
So you'd be against that decision then, PJ?
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, the sport's governing body, this is a fairly substantial evolution of the game, and yet they're saying going forward, you can either use it or not. I mean, it's a rule in the game, essentially. I don't understand that. I can't fathom that at all. You either have it or you don't.
Yep, my comment down here, I guess, after my intro was, this is ludicrous, isn't it? And I guess that's where I'm sitting. Neil, what do you think about it?
Yeah, exactly the same, yeah. I think as you've sort of written down there, it's basically India saying nope and the ICC saying okay.
It's crazy here. I'll just read some of the stuff that I've got.
Is that actually how it went, though?
Well, they do. They make pains to say, our mate Lorgat, the ICC, chairman or GM, whatever, he at the end of this article says he added that there are members other than the BCCI, which is India, the most strident cricket of the DAS, who also expressed their concerns about the technology at the executive board meeting. So the cynic in me says that they, got an arm lock around Bangladesh and Sri Lanka or something and got them on side. But the bizarre thing about it is that they've made it not mandatory, taken it away, and said it's between the countries. But the ICC will still use DRS at all its own events and was, confident about its future. You can't really have foot either side of the fence, can you? And still try to sit on the fence at the same time. It's a bizarre decision.
Well, that strengthens the theory that India have basically decided that they don't want it and that they basically control cricket.
And they struck Hotspot off its list of basic requirements for the DRS, and they cited the latest England-India series where there were a couple of contentious calls, one of which I think was that one off Vivius Laxman's bat, I think, which they didn't pick up, saying that there are inconsistencies with it, but it's, yes.
Yeah. Look, Neil's absolutely right. It's the greatest game in the world, but that's embarrassing. That's really embarrassing.
It smacks of head in the sand approach to stuff, doesn't it? Either that or somebody's got a big fat envelope of the folding stuff. But we didn't say that. That's not what we believe at all. It's ridiculous. Anyway, actually, speaking of big bundles of cash, the match-fixing trial is on of Mr...
Butt.
Asif Butt? No.
Salman.
Salman Butt, that's right. Hard to remember them all. There's so many. And what's the other dude? Neil, help me out.
Asif or Amir.
No, Amir's already pleaded guilty, hasn't he?
Oh, that's right, yeah. Muhammad Asif.
Yes. And there's all sorts of interesting things going on, including the prosecution mentioning stuff about accusations against match fixing by Australia in that Pakistan-Australia test series a little while ago, and they named Nathan Bracken, who has, slipped off the international radar of late, coincidence? Well, yes. who he's come out and agents strenuously denied it, and the agent involved, the Majid guy who was in the News of the World Sting, etc. Apparently, according to him, great mates with Brad Pitt and other Hollywood stars and drives Aston Martins, etc. So they're trying to cast doubt basically on his believability, and he's a fantasist, and why should they believe anything else that he said, i.e. set them up for a fall, these guys, and nothing happened. I read an interesting thing, though, that a statistician has worked out that it was a 1 in 50 million, I think, possibility of those no balls being bowled at the exact point that they were in the test match. So fairly unlikely then. It's a bit of a sad thing that this is the kind of stuff that is dominating the headlines, isn't it? I mean, surely we're still scratching the surface of this stuff, do you reckon?
No, certainly. Yep. It's probably, what's the word? Rife through cricket, to be honest.
Rife, good word.
Yeah. But yeah, I suppose it's just these guys were stupid enough to... Well, I mean, they're all stupid, but these guys were got a bit sloppy, obviously, and got caught. Because you remember not too long ago, there was it Tillakaratne came out and said that it was evident with all the Sri Lankan teams he played for as well?
Ah, did he?
Yeah, I think it was Tillakaratne. So, and he's not going to, unless he's got some sort of personal agenda, I doubt he'll come out and make that sort of stuff up. So, it sounds like it's potentially everywhere, but yeah, could explode at any point.
Sad stuff, indeed. Right, and of course, let's get a bit closer to home. Last weekend was first week of club cricket, and despite what it looks like outside now, actually it's not too bad now, but it was pissing down earlier in the day. Last weekend was nice and fine. Everybody got a game in. Lots of runs, as you kind of expect on artificials, but it's not always the case. Four centuries in the first weekend, which is always great. Aces in the run. Brad Kachopa got 100, 115, but biggest 100 of the day, Barrington Rowland, 144 out of 256 for 8 for University. He got a first up.
There's a name
win
to watch.
Yeah, he could be good. He's fit and rearing to go this year.
It's got a good name too.
Barrington.
It's an awesome name.
That's a proper cricket name there.
And you'd think for a name like Barrington Rowland, that's just your classic West Indian type name, isn't it? But he's a 5 foot nothing Indian man.
We'll take him.
And he scored over 4,000 first class runs as Barrington back in India. He's a very talented man. Who else scored some runs? Oh, Terry Crabb got 100 for Birkenhead, unfortunately in a losing effort against Parnell. Ben Ray got 93 not out for them. How Pack got up over Papatoa in a pretty low-scoring game down on Cornwall Park number 3, which is unusual because it's a postage stamp down there. Takapuna got home on the back of that century for Brad Kachopa, 249 for 2, which is an impressive effort. Cornwall dealt to Ellerslie by an embarrassingly large margin. And East Coast Bays got up over Waitak, despite Waitak's skipper Scott Curtis doing a bit of a one-man show, picked up a 5-wicket bag and got 30-odd with the bat. And what's the other game? Suburbs got up over Eden Roskill. We won't run through the points table because after one game, it's not much point. But hopefully, weather permitting and everything else being equal, they'll be out there for the second round of the Jeff Crow Cup this weekend. So if you get a chance, and as I say, if it's not pissing down, pop on the website, find out what people are playing, and go catch some local premier cricket. There's some great stuff out there, and there's plenty of info on the website at the moment. We've got loads of previews and reviews of stuff going on, so check it out. Ace is still a few weeks away from starting their campaign. November the 7th is their first game. They're busy training at the moment, and there's some, again, stuff up on the website if you want to catch up with how they're going and what's happening with them. First game against Northern Districts, I think, which is away, I believe, up in Whangarei, I think that first one might be, at Cobham Oval up there. So we'll keep you up to date with what's going on there and maybe preview a bit of that next time we come back. And I'm going to stop talking because I've been rambling on for an extremely long time and we've run out of things to say, but we'll be back in 2 weeks' time where we will be giving big props to the ABs, the World Cup champions, and signing off the rugby season before we hit the domestic season proper. So go the ABs, and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening.